You're listening to Sideshow Network.
Why didn't they laugh?
You suck!
That's not funny. Hi, it's Owen. Welcome to another South Park episode of Why Didn't They Laugh, where I will be reviewing the latest episode. It's called Douche in a Danish. Or I'm going to call this review episode No Sustenance, because Randy said that line in the episode and I thought that was just profound. I even took notes on this one because it was such a good episode. I didn't want to miss anything and I just really want to discuss it. All right. So it opens up with all the boys and girls in the schoolyard. And Butters has his wiener out. He's doing his male pride stuff. And not a lot happens here. It's more just setting the tone of toxic. You know, that men and women aren't getting along and they're just calling each other names and it's just a toxic environment. And then Eric and Heidi come in and they're like, hey guys, let's all get along at school. And no one's buying it because Eric Hartman for the last 20 years has been a sociopath. But I like him and Heidi's storyline because everyone kind of knows that activist couple where they're nauseatingly self-righteous, but at the same time, it's not that like evil self-righteous. It's still kind of benevolent. You know, it's not bad, but it's just kind of like, oh, babe, you're so good when you're like breaking down barriers. It's like, no, you are. And they're really playing that up in a very funny way because what they're saying to each other is positive. You're like, oh, cool. I'm glad you guys get along so well. But it's just nauseating. And I know so many couples like that where they like wear the same button about saving some shit. And so they always are like really supportive of each other. So then Mr. Garrison's storyline kicks back in. And I'm glad because two episodes ago was the last time we talked about Garrison's because he's basically Donald Trump. And the storyline was that he wants to get out of the election. And for the first time in years, possibly ever, I thought South Park might have been wrong on this one. Because in real life, it doesn't appear like he wants to get out of the election. I was thinking that as well, where it's like he's just saying crazy shit and people just are liking him and he can't really get out of it. He probably just wanted to sell books and he got wrapped into this mess. But lately, you know, he's saying he won't even concede defeat. Like, he's going guns blazing. He's spiraling. So that was a little bit of a chink in the armor. Until this episode, they did explain it well. And I think that they're on the right path. Because it had one of my favorite scenes of the episode is Garrison is at one of his Trump-esque rallies. And it's the pacing of stand-up comedy. This is no new concept. A lot of people have looked at Trump and said that's a comedian or a rapper. You know, he has the pacing of comedy where he's like, geez, so I was in the airport and this Muslim. He's just doing jokes. He's like, the TSA is supposed to protect us, but they're a bunch of thugs from the inner city. Am I right? And he like takes a drag on his cigarette, like a long dramatic comedian pace. And then his advisors in the scene before told him to lay off women, to not attack women. And he's like, geez. Like, it's a window into how he can possibly get out. And so he starts being like, so at the airport, I stick my finger in this girl's asshole. And I'm like, yeah, I'll put it in your clam too. He's like, good thing you're not fucking gross and ugly, or else I wouldn't finger, you know. He's basically saying the shit that Trump has really been saying lately, or that he got caught saying, whatever. And people are still laughing, and then one woman stands up and gets out. I thought this part was so funny when Garrison's like, oh, that was the line? Fuck immigrants. Fuck all those immigrants. But that was the line? Fingering your butthole? Fuck you. Very funny. Okay, so because it's true. It's true how like people have different lines that they cross. It's like, well, I can... And women is the line that I think really sinks a politician because that cuts into every religion, every race, every social class has women that don't want to have their pussies grabbed or fingered. Okay, so then the next scene is the troll meeting. And it's interesting. I just watched Legos, the movie that came out several years ago, but I'd never seen that cartoon. And there was the company in South Park in Denmark is called Lego. And I see an odd parallel in the storyline between with Gerald. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen Legos, the movie, but Chris Pratt's character is like the chosen one. And it's because he's so average and like every day, but that ends up being the quality that makes him take down, you know, the Will Ferrell character. And in this, Gerald is the only troll that doesn't seem to have an axe to grind. Like, he truly is just doing it for lulz, he says. He's just doing it for laughs. And his, like, lack of emotional commitment to being a troll is why he's so good at trolling. You know, there's that scene where the Dildo Schwaggins, the other troll, is telling him that his mom is a midget, and so she married a guy with giantism because she thought she'd have a normal looking son, and he's all sad, and Gerald's just kind of laughing. I think a lot of trolls came into it because they're just sad, angry people, and they're not really the most efficient trolls because there's too much at stake for them. They're emotional. The real lethal trolls are the Geralds. You know, he's a lawyer in this, he's a Jewish lawyer in South Park. And he's just very smart and articulate, and he's always been a good dad. And I think that he understands human nature to the point where when he's bored, he can kind of just watch the ants fight. And there's a scene where he talks about how to properly troll. It's not about the thing you say, it's about the reaction. So it's kind of like I posted a YouTube video a while ago called Peace Will Never Go Viral. And he kind of sums up why things go viral, trolls go viral, is half-truths go viral. So when he says something, he's trying to get people to have like this very self-righteous reaction. And then that reaction is so over-the-top self-righteous that it's annoying. And then that triggers the following reaction, and that keeps going like an atom bomb, like a nuclear reaction. Oh, and what I was going to add about Garrison, I think that Garrison's character in this, there's an old Asian expression called riding the dragon. And I've discussed it in previous episodes of Why Don't They Laugh. Some historians think Julius Caesar was riding the dragon and Genghis Khan and a lot of these dictators. Because what happens when you represent a group of desperate people, and this is why I'll never just trash Trump supporters. Yes, some are awful and racist and whatever you want to call them, but a lot of them are just desperate. They're in a group of our society that has been looked over and ignored and fucked with for a long time. And so they desperately need someone to speak for them. And when you're dealing with that, when you're playing with fire, like when you're representing a group of people that want blood, you can't stop. Because the expression riding the tiger, riding the dragon, depending on what group of origin, just picture you're on the back of a tiger and you're riding the tiger. If you get off the tiger will eat you. Basically, the concept is you can always ride the tiger as long as the tiger doesn't see you in its path. You can't quit. Like Julius Caesar couldn't stop conquering lands. If he did, he would have been executed. You know, his enemies in Rome would have brought him on trial because as long as he was, there's a phrase for it, it was the voice of the plebeians, the plebs. He had some like title that couldn't be tried in court. And so if he gave up that title, he would go to jail and probably execute it. So he had to continuously escalate his dictatorial power until he became a dictator. And, you know, it's chicken or the egg. Who's to say he did that because of that, or he was wanted to be tried because he was a dictator. Who knows? But Garrison is facing a similar situation in this, and so is Trump, where, like, when you get the people all fired up and jacked up, if he says, like, fuck it, I'm out, like, they'd, like, kill him. You know, you can't get behind people and then bail when they're that desperate, when they're tigers. So you see that, you know, the angry mob is chasing Garrison. And yeah, Okay, so Garrison's riding the tiger, and then what is this? Oh yeah, so when Gerald is discussing his trolling, I don't know if you guys have read The Hunger Games. I'm not sure if it was in the movie. It might have been the movie. Probably. It's a big scene, but I know in the book, and I know a lot of terrorist organizations do this. When sometimes people will set off a bomb with a lot of women and children around that like hurts them, and then when all the ambulances come in to rescue, this is how Jennifer Lawrence, how her sister died in fucking Hunger Games, but when all the people come in to help the injured, there's a second bomb, and then that one is the one that really destroys the soul of the community because now the people trying to help have been killed, so that strikes at. That strikes at the good nature of humans. And so that's what Gerald is attempting here. He's going to say some crazy shit, and then everyone who comes in to save the day will then be attacked by another wave of trolls, and then that's how you create a nuclear reaction. Okay. Yeah. And then the Danishes for Denmark, Heidi and Eric, set up this charity where they're doing Danishes for Denmark. That's just a plot point. It's not really. They're going to sell Danishes to help Denmark discover the trolls. And they're getting all excited and people are coming together and all that shit. Okay. So, a really funny line. It doesn't move the plot or anything, but I thought it was really funny when Gerald was popping in and he sees Ike, like his little baby. And he just says, "Hey, Ike, we're going to be in the other room. Say hi to Dildo Schwaggins." I don't know. I thought that was funny. And so then. Dildo Schwaggins and Gerald have that troll heart to heart where Dildo Schwaggins is like, "Why do you do this?" And that's kind of a powerful scene. It's as a comedian, I can tell when people add, dick jokes and puns and just absurdity and grossness to hide real emotion. And that's what makes South Park so powerful, is these are very powerful emotions that we're dealing with here that is just made funny and you can digest it a lot easier when someone's named Dildo Schwaggins and asks like, "Why are you angry?" Basically saying you have everything, Gerald. Why are you doing this? Okay. Then of course there's the Let's Come Together as a School singing song musical, which just reinforces Trey and Matt's disdain for PSAs. I love that they hate those. Growing up, I always hated those, because they were such liars. Talking about how if you do weed, if you smoke weed, you'll end up on the streets and your parents will both get AIDS. It was all just lies. And then at the very end of the song, Eric just says, "And terraform Mars." I think that's a shot. It's just that absurd cause. Terraforming Mars is so fucking stupid. How about we worry about our own Earth? How about you terraform Greenland first? It's trillions of dollars cheaper. All right. And then we have the Star Wars scene with the trolls. They're all getting ready. They have their headsets on and they're listing their names and they're saying, "Standing by, standing by." They're getting ready to invade. And I like this scene a lot as well because it shows that I believe that that's reality. I think that there are armies of trolls that are paid to take down or influence social movements online. And it's cool that they just kind of show a parody of that. And then we have some really cool shit. So this is when the episode goes from just being a standard South Park great episode to being a classic. I mean, these are concepts that I never came up with on my own and probably never would. And some of my I don't know if that. Some of my interpretations might be a little out there, but let me know what you guys think. Okay, so Garrison comes into the Memberberry support group that Stan's dad Randy has been a part of. And he's melting down. He's being chased by a mob of people that want to kill him. And Stan's dad is so funny. Randy's so funny in this, and he's just like, "It's not your fault. Have a seat, little cowboy. Take a load off." And they start talking about member berries. And so the Trump character starts talking about how he got caught up in the cheers and he just liked being on TV every day and he just kept escalating. And then Randy started breaking down what he was. And it's a criticism and it's also just a enlightening view of what Trump is. And it's all because of member berries. You know, the member, do you remember when America was great? Remember? And this is what I thought was very, very interesting, is remember when we had a big, it's this look to the big, strong man. You know, the Trump is the strong man, that we need a big, strong man to protect us, like before. And it dawned on me that it's the same coin. It's the same infantilizing of ourselves that we see the college kids do. It appears that they're the opposite, right? When we have Halloween costumes offending everybody and kids thinking they have PTSD because they didn't have, like grown-up kids, like 22-year-olds saying that they have PTSD because of prolonged eye contact and they need a safe space and they want to put on their pajamas and talk about unicorns. That's nauseatingly infantile. And then it dawned on me, the appeal of Donald Trump is just as infantile. As Randy was talking about how looking to the big strong man for support, and I watched this episode twice, and the first time I was watching it, I saw my son looking at me, who's a baby. And I'm like, what is more childlike than looking to Donald Trump to be our dad and to say, protect us? I don't know. I just found that like, there's something so vulnerable of like looking to the big man, because it almost means that you don't feel like a big man yourself, that you need another big man to protect you. And Donald Trump is the big man. And it comes from what Randy was talking about with member berries. He says, every member berries are as old as time, basically. And every civilization that has reached its peak starts getting bored and complacent. And then they just start remembering when they were strong. And, it's just so amazing. I love Dan Carlin. He has Hardcore History, which is an unbelievable podcast. If people ask me what podcast to listen to, that's the first one I say. Listen to the Wrath of Khans. Listen to all of them. I've listened to every one of his episodes multiple times. He is unbelievable. I now listen to Common Sense with Dan Carlin, which is about modern time and politics. He is just... He debated Sam Harris on Sam Harris's podcast, Waking Up with Sam Harris, who's a curmudgeon-y, but yet he's a brilliant curmudgeon neuroscientist atheist who seems a little on the spectrum, like really, really doesn't like Islam at all. And him and Dan debated, and if you could listen to that one, you'll love it. It's because they both make such excellent points. Like whether or not Islam... by definition, is a bad thing in the world or not. And Dan does a great job arguing that it's all cultural relativism and yada yada, and Sam does a great job arguing that they don't have like a Pope figure to say that things are, you know, to say that terrorist attacks aren't bad, and, you know, Muhammad was, you know, he had sex slaves and all this stuff. And it's just... I don't know why I'm going down that rabbit hole, but like I'm just trying to explain that Dan Carlin is a genius. So one concept that Carlin introduced to me, which was a quote from one of his favorite historians, is that the sound of an empire rising is wooden shoes on steps, and the sound of an empire falling is silk shoes going down the stairs. And he's used this in many of his podcasts. The ones talking about the Persian Empire and, you know, the rise of, what was that guy's name? The King of Kings episode. It's fantastic. Xerxes was his grandson. It's just unbelievable how that grit, that Genghis Khan grit that Trump is trying to get us to member, like member berries, like remember when America was great. And I think that great is the wrong word. I think the word is hungry. Because this is a question that Dan Carlin asked on one of his episodes, is what would you rather be? Genghis Khan or Kublai Khan? And for me, there's no question, it's Kublai Khan, just because we reminisce hunger, because you feel the most alive when you're hungry. And I've done this with my career at points, and I've made myself hungry again in certain ways, and I'm happy staying hungry. I think there's a good balance between wood and silk. And you know, some of my best memories of my life were when it was when I had nothing. It was when I was in LA living with two of my best friends in a studio apartment, bussing tables. I was a janitor. I was doing open mics. I was getting, you know, I was doing stand up in front of four people. You know, my best friend died. There was trouble on the home front. It was an intense time, and it was like beautiful. Like, looking back, I'd never felt more alive. And as my career rose, there's just nowhere to go. Like, after you hit a certain point, you're now just, you can enter this like haze of reminiscence. You know, I was talking to Sal from the Impractical Jokers about that, and I always am so impressed by him, because I've known him since MySpace days. Like, me and him used to exchange messages in like 05, 06 about when he was the Tenderloins, him and Joe and all those guys in Q, Murr. And we would talk, you know, and he hasn't changed. Like, he is so sweet. All those guys are so sweet. And we're talking about it. And he's just very insightful. Like, he's one of those guys that just really understands life, and he just gets it. And, you know, he talks about how in one night, we did an open mic together. Well, he did it. I was just there watching, and at Levity Live in New York. And I'll be there in November, by the way, if you want to grab tickets at hugepianist.com. Pianist. OwenBenjamin.com if you don't want to risk spelling that wrong. But so he's working out material in front of 9 people, and then 2 days later, he's in front of 40,000 people. So he knows that gear shift. And we're talking about how there comes a point where there is no more. Like the next level of fame or success or wealth doesn't give you any more. I don't know if you guys have ever done drugs, but if you're doing cocaine, first couple lines, you're like, this is awesome. This is great. I have some great ideas for reality shows. I think I could learn another language right now. I don't want to go to bed. Good times. 5-6 hours later, you just want more coke. And then you get more coke, and it doesn't make you feel any different. There's no more coke. And so societies can hit this place. Like, America took over the whole world. And there's probably people in other countries right now listening to this being like, easy, you guys didn't take over us. After World War II, America put bases everywhere. Like, we were the last country really standing with a solid infrastructure. We were just a nuclear and economic absolute fucking machine. And then you start asking yourself, like, what now? And then you start getting weak. You know, Genghis Khan said, I mean, who knows? This is 700 years ago. But he would wear pelts of rats. Even when he was the richest man in the world at the time, he would wear rat skin. And he would drink blood from his horse as he would ride, because he didn't want to stop, because he was so fired up to fucking kill people. And his grandson was wearing silk. And he realized he had nothing in common with his grandson, because his grandson was born and raised wealthy. And so the Mongols would institute a policy where they made their citizens they had to live on the steppe, like in Mongolia, for like 3 or 5 months a year, so they stayed tough, or else they... What happened, the reason the Mongol Empire collapsed was they just got bred, they became Chinese. And that doesn't make a lot of sense, like just saying it like that, but think about this. The Chinese culture at the time that they constantly were taking over and just annihilating, because they were so much tougher. The Chinese were agriculture, they were trade, they had a great currency, they had a solid government, great roads. They were stay-put people. They were like a middle-class type society. And the Mongols were these hungry, just warlords, just on a horse wearing rats, you know, just shooting arrows from fucking 2 miles away and hitting you in the dick. So they were decimating China. But then what happens? Sometimes winning is how you lose. Like when the Mongols would win, they would take all the spices and take all the silk and blah, blah, blah. And the real maniacs would just keep fighting and taking over lands and all this shit. But a lot of them would stay and they'd learn how to farm and they'd still shoot their arrow a little bit. But their arrow would collect dust because they learned how to farm for rice and they'd learn about calligraphy and they'd start wearing silk. They'd wear the rat stuff every now and then, but and then their kids are like, why would we even wear rat stuff? I mean, we have silk. There's not even any member berries for the kids. And within three generations, you're now Chinese. Like, you're no longer the culture that took over shit. And that's happened to America. And so which part is this? Yeah, like Randy said, sometimes when cultures hit a certain point or a nation hit a certain point, going backwards is more appealing than going forwards. And that's where we're at. And it's not bad. I think that we're very safe and we don't need more. I actually want us to leave countries. I don't want us to have to police the whole world. I don't want that Team America fuck yeah shit. That originally wasn't ego that we did that. America didn't take over the world out of ego. They did it because we didn't want to get into war. And by we, I mean people that were dead long before I was born. But Adolf Hitler was taking over all this shit. And we were like, leave us the fuck out. We don't want to go have another world war. Fuck that. You know, revisionist history will say, like, you know, America was anti-Semitic or blah, blah, blah. No, we just didn't want to go back to Europe and fight people. And so Hitler's taking Czech Republic, invades Poland. You know, we're like, fuck, dude, just stop. And then finally he goes too far and we realize we have to go to war. And then Pearl Harbor happens, we're at war. And it's so bloody and so devastating. 60 million people, 60 million dead, mostly civilians. Starvation, disease, genocide. So America's the last people standing, and we just exploded the nuclear bomb. Two of them. So the world is in a state of PTSD. It's in a state of aftershock. And everyone was kind of like, hey, America, can you like make sure this doesn't happen again? And everyone was like, yeah, let's not punish Germany like we did in the Treaty of Versailles. Let's not create a toxic environment that gives rise to a dictator. Let's start the United Nations. Maybe Wilson was right with the League of Nations, but he's such a fucking dickhead. So we do that. And then over time, it becomes its own industry. That's the problem with good deeds sometimes, is it only has a few generations before you forget why you originally did it, and then it becomes exploitable. Unions are like that. Unions are awesome. You know, unions came out of like real hardship, and then it becomes a way to price gouge and do all this crazy shit. It's the same with America's foreign policy. Like after Hitler and Stalin and all that shit, we were like, okay, we are going to be everywhere in the world so that we don't have another one of these sneak up on us. And over time, we start policing the world. We start inflicting our culture on people. We start getting involved in shit that we shouldn't get involved with. We start becoming hypocritical, supporting one nation and destroying another who practice the same barbaric shit just because one has oil. You know, it's ugly. And so that's where we're at right now. So maybe we do want to step down a few of the stairs with our silk slippers and get to a more comfortable place where we can just not always reminisce to when we were hungry and instead just kind of live. And so then the comedy of that scene is when they blame J.J. Abrams. The J.J. Abrams is to blame. And that's when he said no sustenance. That member berries start coming in when there's no... That the new Star Wars... He goes, it's about time we admitted the new Star Wars sucked. It was like the old one except no sustenance. And that really stuck out at me because that's what's plaguing our food at the same time. Is we have all this food and all the sustenance has been taken out for efficiency. Again, started great. Chicken used to be like 40 bucks a pound. Now it's like $3 a pound. Poor people can eat chicken. Great, great, great. But over decade after decade of fine-tuning that efficiency, Now it's like bland to the point where we have to pump it with chemicals to make it taste like anything, just like our vegetables. Read the Dorito effect. It's fascinating. But see, that's where I think the major crazy backlash of Ghostbusters came from, was that was the ultimate in member burying. Whereas where people took this movie, Ghostbusters, that was done and was great and it meant something great to a lot of people, and they remade it and they inflicted our modern softness on it. And if you're this far into this podcast and you think that me saying that is sexist, I would have a hard time believing that, because that person would have to be schizophrenic. When I say soft, I mean like the modern social agendas. And don't be triggered by these words like I'm coming from a political stance, because I'm not. I'm coming from just a stance of what is. And let's say like the flavor of the week in the early aughts, you know, the 2000s was gay people, gay marriage. You know, the 80s and 90s, it was Jews. You know, every movie was about the Holocaust. It was just Jews, 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 and gay people with marriage and all that. And then women became very trendy, and then that became trans. And then there's always like a trendy group that people claim need a lot of help. And I'm always down for equality and support and all that shit. But when it's jarringly trendy, where it's like, we're going to take an all-male movie and give it female characters. If they had done this 20 years ago and Ghostbusters came out in 1960 and they did this in 1980, no one would have given a shit, because we weren't like member burying. You know, it was almost like the final straw of like, we don't have new ideas. And so then they took an old idea and they changed it to fit this whole like, women can do everything, which is oddly condescending. Like, of course women can be Ghostbusters. A friend of mine that works in the movie industry actually told me something very sad about the backlash, the left-wing fucking crazy feminist backlash to Ghostbusters, is they were planning many more Ghostbusters that they won't do now, because it just didn't make much money, because controversy only sells short term. It doesn't sell long term. And these movie franchises cost billions of dollars. So they were going to have the alternate universe of then the male Ghostbusters and then the female Ghostbusters. And they like work together and it's almost like Marvel and, you know, but they can't, they're just icing it because the backlash was so toxic and crazy. And this episode, I'm going to wrap this up soon. I know I'm rambling, but, this episode kind of dealt with that toxicity, because if you take Ghostbusters and remake it with women in a vacuum, that shouldn't be offensive to anybody. That's benign. Who cares? It's a movie. That doesn't affect you. But when it represents something that's happening, people get charged up. And so the trolling works. Gerald's trolling works. And there's this great scene where everyone goes against Denmark now, because they trolled Denmark. So now everyone fucking hates Denmark. And so the bake sale falls apart. And then there's this great scene where the boys and the girls are now fighting again over nothing. And there's subtext, I can't remember the exact words, but the subtext is like, the trolls are doing this. That all this like gender trolling and all this crazy shit is making people react with this indignation of like, fuck Ghostbusters, because they feel threatened. Like, all these people feel like their way of life is being threatened, and that we're just going to live in this remembrance haze of bullshit for eternity, and America is going soft and we have to make it great again. And I just found that incredible, that realization that Trump is in fact also infantile, that like, he's not a step in the right direction as far as making America tough and hungry and great again, because we would be voting for our father and we're five. And we just have this big, strong man to make noise and kick dirt and say, bruh, 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 bruh. And that's just as infantile as safe spaces. And I think it is coming, because where do you go when you took over the whole globe? You know, England did that. England took over the whole world. and then they retracted back to England, and they seem pretty good. I mean, I communicate a lot with British people through comedy, and I've been there before, and the sun never set on the British Empire, and then they just kind of went home, and, you know, they're good. I think England seems pretty solid. I don't think that the apocalyptic nightmare that we're all fearing is that bad. If we're just America, if our inflicting foreign policy can just calm down a little, like, make America great again implies hunger, like westward expansion. Let's get Alaska. Oh, we got Alaska, fucking Hawaii, Guam. Let's get on a great white fleet, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, fucking go, go. People don't realize how long imperialism lasted. It wasn't just the 1800s and the cowboys and Indians. We're talking deep into the 20th century. We're still acquiring property and like taking boats everywhere and fucking taking shit. So if the answer to this mania and this toxicity is just to realize that we don't have to keep going. Like I made that decision in my career, and I talked about that a lot on this podcast, but I'm telling you, the thing you fear isn't that bad. In fact, it's liberating. I look back to myself 3-4 years ago when I was first with Amy, and I was on a television show making a fucking ton of money, and I was still, you know, being a scumbag with chicks and, you know, justifying it to myself, being like, oh, I'm a man, Amy, don't look at my phone. I've talked about this. And I was in that expansion mindset where I'm like, I just have to keep expanding. I need to more. And then when I realized that, like, there is no more, like, what comes next? Like, how do you Ponzi scheme forever? You don't. You die. Like, I know dudes in their 40s and 50s that were huge stars and still are very famous and very rich, and they just, like, what do you do? Like, how do you just keep escalating that until you what? Your fucking, like, sisters? Well, one's in a closet with a knife. Like, how do you keep going with, like, more? Like, how do you get, like, what, do you live in the White House? I guess that's Trump in a way, Hillary in another way. But, like, falling in love and getting married and being just with one woman happily and leaving LA and living, taking control of my life to be near my family and to grow our own shit. We're making a chicken coop right now. It's like all the weight fell off my shoulders, and Amy is happy all the time. She used to fucking get so mad at me. I wrote a thing on Facebook, if you guys want to read it. It's called The Euphoria of Honesty. It's really long, but people seem to react well to it. And I basically just describe like what makes toxic from my life. And that was hiding, you know, because then I would start feeling like a perv and like gross, because I'd be like dirty texting with some chick at night. And I had this new girlfriend who I was all about, but I just couldn't stop this like thing. And it was because I was single for so long, and I was so used to like just very non dramatic, like really nice sexual experiences with tons of people. And I was lying to myself and just going and going. And then once I just, because what happens is Amy would act crazy. And every girl that was in my life, she assumed I was fucking. If I was an hour late, I fucked someone at a gas station. Like in her mind, I was like the devil. And I was up to some shit, but not at the level she thought I was, like not even close. But the thing about human nature is we're really good at sensing when we're being lied to, but we don't know what that lie is. And so we start putting in all this crazy shit. Like the US government is lying to us right now. They're stealing from us and they're lying to us. But we don't know what. So we start saying like chemtrails and fucking 9/11 was an inside job and all these things that are provably false. Like my wife got her master's degree in structural engineering. Like those towers fell exactly how they would fall at that temperature. Like, and you can fight it all you want, but what you're fighting is you don't want to give in to the fact that you know you're being lied to and you can't pinpoint the lie. Once I started being transparent with Amy, once I started being like, you know, Yeah, I can be a scumbag, you know. We went through some dark times, you know. We broke up. But then you start, like, once someone really knows you, they don't get mad anymore. Like, Amy's the least crazy chick you've ever fucking met. Because I was causing it. I was putting a level of deceit in our relationship that made her not trust anything that came out of my mouth. And then once I revealed what it was, she wasn't even that mad. She almost found it, like, hot in a weird way. Like, she was almost, like, into it. Not like she wants me to bang other chicks, but just, like, she almost likes that I'm a pervert animal. Like, it turns her on. And I never would have known that if I hadn't, like, really been myself around her. I always would have hidden that. I know so many gay people that face that. That, like, they live this, like, very destructive life. Thank God it's not happening anymore as much. It still is, but not nearly as much. Homophobia is becoming very much a relic in America, especially in cities. Not in the world. God, no. They're setting fire to these people. But, like, I remember in the 80s, like, knowing gay people, and there was a self-hatred there that I just always wanted to say, like, don't you know there's nothing wrong with you? Even as a child, I felt that. Like, don't you see that there's nothing wrong with your nature? Like, why do you hate yourself? And then now that it's becoming so accepted to be gay, it's really awesome seeing homosexuals not have to, like, have, like, drug-induced fucking 9-sex partner glory hole orgies all night. That's not because you're horny. It's because you hate yourself. In that book, The Dorito Effect, that I highly recommend, that's one of the main points. It's food addicts don't love food more than everyone else. They're just never satisfied. They've done study after study. People that are obese, it's not that they have more endorphins or they love food. It's that food doesn't satisfy them. And that comes from usually an addiction to, like, natural flavors and all this fucking garbage they're putting in our food, or an emotional emptiness. But homosexuals face the same thing for so long, where it was like, okay, there's something wrong with me. They felt like they were evil, guys. I don't think you understand the fucking destruction of that, where you're like, okay, I'm bad. So then out of that, they start having this really destructive, manic sex life. A lot of them, or abstinence, or they become homophobes because they're fucking attacking people that appear freer than them. And so, like me, when I admitted my perversions and, like, my dirty little desires, and, like, it kind of went away. Like, this is part of the thing I wrote about. Like, recently Amy was like, hey, like, you, it's so funny. She was like, you were always really good at, like, sleeping with women, and it really made you happy. And, like, if you ever want to do that, you know, I'm comfortable enough in our relationship where, like, because the reason she was saying this, it isn't because she wants, like, that she's totally okay with that. It's that I'm very obsessive. I'm sure you can guess that by now. And it's my obsessions have done some good things. Like, I'm sick at the piano, but it also makes me, like, pine over human nature and, like, why we do the things we do. And when I was more of a womanizer, I did appear happier, but that was just because I was pining over, like, vaginas. And then when you start pining over, like, politics and fucking war and shit like that, there is a weight that kind of settles on you a little bit. Not that much, not all the time, but just sometimes. And we were just like, I was kind of like just ranting about some shit. And she was like, because she's an engineer. She's like, what will make you the happiest? And I even told her, I go, Amy, like, the fact that you know me this well and are so comfortable to say this to me, it makes me, like, I don't even want to. And you saying that makes me want to even less. And I know that, like, some of you might be thinking, like, yeah, right, fucking pussy. I swear to God, it's like, Amy is, like, we have such a good sex life when Walter isn't fucking screaming. But, like, I like to put that energy towards other shit, like figuring out how fire works, or, like, trying to, like, cook better, or, like, learning a language. Like, I don't need those complications of, like, multiple sex partners anymore. And I just love that she like loves me enough to like, I think that the reverse has also happened with Amy and I, where she's had some harebrained idea that's like her like dream or some shit, and it's like horribly expensive and inefficient, and like I know for a fact she won't even like it in the end, but I'm like down, I'm committed. And then the last minute she'll pull back and be like, this is a bad idea, but thank you so much for like indulging me for who I am. And I think that that's like a good quality that we have in our relationship. All right, I've rambled so goddamn much. If you want to support the show, buy Case Closed Beers Open, handcrafted fucking beer coasters at my website, hugepianist.com. I make them myself in the garage. My brother and I cut down the trees ourselves. It's an act of love. There's love in every one of those. Or you could just buy us beers if you don't even want the coasters. Just want to throw down, help out, help the cause. Or just come to live shows. That also helps us out, helps pay those bills, yo. Remember when I was rich? I'm just kidding. No, I'm doing fine. You don't have to buy me shit. I'm not desperate. I'm doing good. I still own a condo in LA. We rent it out. A couple hundo bucks a month. That's right. Fucking assets. But I'm not ever going to be rich like I used to be. Because that was all Ponzi scheme shit. I was motivated to be fucking rich. And I didn't even realize it. I was like loving, I just started like loving just raking in cash. And me and Amy never fought more. And it just didn't matter. So thank you again. And I got nothing else to say. I've been rambling a lot. I haven't slept in almost 40 hours. So forgive me. But thanks again for listening. South Park kicks ass. Comment, rate the show. I can't respond. I see all your very nice things that you guys write. But iTunes doesn't let me respond. But if you keep commenting, that we keep climbing the chart. So thank you so much. I love you guys. Peace.
Hey, it's comedian Michael Loftus, and I'm here to tell you about my podcast, The Loftus Party, right here on the Sideshow Network. You know, one of the great things about being a comedian in America is you automatically get a podcast. And mine? I'm taking on politics, pop culture, and the world as I see it. You guys, it's an election year. There's plenty to laugh about. There's plenty to joke about. And if you want to go to another podcast where they're ripping up the Constitution and they're trampling, you're at the wrong one. Mine is a lot more fun. So here's what you can do. Join me for the Loftus Party. It's Michael Loftus every Monday. You download that, you subscribe, you give it a bunch of stars on iTunes, or you check us out on the sideshownetwork.tv/The Loftus Party. It's amazing. Loftus, party of one, your table is now ready.